Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of December, 2022. Welcome to episode 91 of this podcast series. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we've had one of these brief chats, which should make this more or less the books I read during December. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those, but those posts are not spoilers for the podcast. Those are just lists, and here we do a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. Sir Luke Giaconetti wrote in on the last two episodes for October, for Spooky Times month. He wrote in, "Professor, I have said it before, and knowing the issues I have with memory, I will say it again, but reading horror comics in October just plain makes sense. The chill in the air. The days getting darker a bit earlier, and maybe, just maybe, the veil between the realms of daylight and darkness gets a little thinner, a little more malleable, allowing all sorts of strange things to slip through. Of all the varied horror stories you talked about on the episode, I must admit that three Archie books were standouts for me. The collection Sabrina's Monster Manual sounds like a lot of fun. My daughter has a large collected edition of very early Sabrina stories, the first few years worth, I think. And those oddball stories are usually a hoot. I am also predisposed to like Sabrina due to my first celebrity crush being Melissa Joan Hart, dating back to Clarissa Explains It All. Anyway, tales calculated to drive you bats sounds intriguing as well, with Archie creators doing non-Archie stories. And finally, Chilling Adventures in Sorcery sounds right up my alley, one of those books I've heard of, but never actually seen. Very much need to read some of these comics. I believe all three of those, Luke, were available on the Hoopla app, to which I know you have access. This year, I read several issues of DC's more overlooked horror mystery title, Ghosts, from the Showcase Presents volumes. I think because the title is so strictly focused on one supernatural aspect of horror, it does not get as much love as some of its stablemates. But the idea of a comic dedicated to ghost stories, given the long popularity of that particular type of horror tale, does have a certain appeal. These early issues are all oversized, which is almost always a plus for an anthology, and the black and white presentation of the art gives it a harsher edge despite the code-friendly content. One strip that stood out for me was The Threshold of Nightmare House from Ghosts number 4 with art by John Kalnin. That name did not jump out to me, but he had a prolific career with DC doing a mix of superhero and horror, including more than 20 issues of Ghosts. Evidently, he's also the co-creator of Lucius Fox, so hopefully he gets some royalties somewhere along the line for that. This particular story about a young woman forced to live in a house which she has repeatedly seen in her nightmares is very creepy, and does a nice job of using the modern style and fashions of 1972 without looking tacky or ridiculous. I will definitely be reading more Ghosts in the future. Looking forward, as always, to all the war comics in November. Thanks, Luke. Yes, Luke, Melissa Joan Hart. I get that. Anyway, speaking of November, Sir Luke wrote in on that episode as well. "Professor, recently listened to your November Comics Reading Journal and wanted to thank you both for the shout-out regarding War Comics Month, as well as your continued participation in it. For this year's War Comics Month, I primarily continued my reading from DC's Showcase Presents The Losers, specifically The Loser Strips from our Fighting Forces 134 to 141. That era of the strip was written by Bob Kaniger with art by John Severin, and was unusual in that it featured a change in the status quo. Captain Storm, believed KIA, and the Losers joined by the Norwegian freedom fighter Ona after the Germans took over her village. This story lasts for about 6 issues before Storm's fate is revealed. Additionally, I also read several public domain comics, mostly from Charlton, but a few others as well, and Marvel's Sergeant Fury Annual No. 1, which was provided to me in coverless form from our mutual friend Kirk Spencer. Yes, Luke, I would not want to bet on who loves War Comics more, you or Kirk. Luke continues, from a more modern perspective, I read the first 2 volumes of The Jewish Brigade via Hoopla, dealing with 2 Jews, 1 British and 1 Palestinian, hunting down the SS in post-war Europe. Note to self, put the Jewish Brigade on the list for next November. Of course, it would not be a War Comics Month without some Sad Sack, at which I have a couple more issues thanks for the generosity of fellow comics readers and the comic book circle of life. It amuses me greatly that at one point Sad Sack was popular enough to have several spin-off titles, a la his stablemates at Harvey, most notably Richie Rich, but also Casper. Additionally, I tweeted out a month's worth of Sunday strips from Beetle Bailey, continuing the tradition of service comedy. The main non-war title, which stood out to me of your reading on this episode, was, of course, the first volume of Chris Cantwell's Iron Man. So glad that you wrote in on that, Luke. As I am writing this, Cantwell's run has wrapped up with issue 25, and in general, I would say that it is a worthwhile read. The addition of Patsy Walker was a surprising twist, and there is some very intriguing big ideas, which Cantwell explores during the run. However, I do have to note that Cantwell also continues a trend in which many modern Iron Man writers indulge, that Tony is in constant need of redemption, requires his friends and allies to get anything done, and can, from a certain point of view, not even be considered a true hero. This characterization became popular during the Civil War era and has stuck more often than not. To wit, Dan Slott's more upbeat take on Iron Man was decried by large swaths of critics for not being realistic. Interpret that as grimly cynical. As an aside, for all Marvel crows about Civil War, I personally have never heard anyone look back positively on that series, nor the era it spawned. When the MCU film with the same name was released, I joked that it was better than the comic book from which it took its name, but that itself was a low bar. Thanks for the show, and I remain your devoted listener, Sir Luke. Well, keep listening, Luke. I've got some more Iron Man talk coming up in just a few minutes. Social media support for the November episode came from Shane Kelly, Vic and Phoenix, Pat, from the Longbox Crusade, Chris Willette, Karen, from Between the Pages, where pop culture and food meet, James, from Karen, Clinton, from Coffee and Comics, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Chris, from Professor Frenzy, It's a Show, Billy D, from Magazines and Monsters, Easy Comic Reader, Drew, from Comics for Fun and Profit, Chris Lydon 7, The Telltale Mind, Mark Radulich, Donald Bergen, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, and Derek W.C. from the wonderful Fanholes podcast. Thank you all. And now, on to the books that I read last month, as we do on this show, categorize or classify the books. And first up are the issues I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. And to join Sir Iowa's Joe and Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, on a holiday-themed episode of 21st Century Boys, I read Super Friends 42, A Very Wacky Wonder Twins Story. I also read one story from the DC Rebirth holiday special, but more on that later. And comics I read for listening to podcasts, and there are getting to be a good number of these most months because DC Infinite app, and I love following along with comic book podcasters if I have the chance, and the app gives me more opportunities to have that chance. So thank you, DC Comics themed podcasters. To listen along with the Lady Laurel, aka Mountain Flower, and her crew on Feathers and Foes 195, they covered the miniseries Birds of Prey, Manhunt 1-4, written by the excellent Chuck Dixon. This was a reread for me, but it was worth it to hear them talking about it with it again fresh in my mind. And for listening along with Clinton on a holiday episode of his Coffee and Comics show, I read the DC Holiday Bash 2. This is the one with that great silent Sergeant Rock story, among other solid stuff. And to listen along with the new Batman Family Reunion podcast, I read Batman Family 12, featuring solo stories for both Batgirl and Robin, and a story starring one of my fave members of the Bat family, Man-Bat. And for the latest episodes of Billy D's new podcast, The Brave and the Bob, I read The Brave and the Bold, 94 and 148. 94 was wild, featuring the Teen Titans joining in on a battle between Gotham City and its greatest scourge at the time, teenagers. And the other one was a bizarre Christmas story about tax evasion and cigarette smuggling. So yeah. Wild. And to listen along with Shag, I don't know, what was I thinking? I think I need help. To his Justice League blah 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 podcast, I read Justice League America 51. And to listen along with the triumphant return of Angela's Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace podcast, episode 56, I read Sensation Comics 36. The lead story featured Wonder Woman going up against a team-up of some of her leading villains. Or was it? Of the backup features, Wildcat was the one that stood out this month. So, on to the general comic reading that I did, and we start with the new comics that I read right off the shelf. And yes, there is one. At the request of Sir Martin of Grey, and this is one of the rights and privileges appertaining thereto, of members of the Relatively Geeky Roundtable, I read Fantastic Four 2021 issue number 2, also known as Fantastic Four Legacy 695, which made me long for the old days when every month you would get an issue of a comic and it was numbered exactly one number greater than the one you got the month before. Also, get off my lawn. But, great little story about Doom using his Doom bots to do a little bit of good and extend a bit of kindness. And from Hoopla, current series from Image, that I've heard really good things about and enjoyed the first 4 issues of. This is 8 Billion Genies, 5 and 6, about what happens when every human being gets one genie and one wish. These specific issues take place 8 months and then 8 years in the future, which is one of the elements of the series, of which there will, of course, be 8 issues. It is such a high concept that it really has to be delivered with confidence and skill in order to work. And so far, with 2 issues to go, I've really enjoyed it. I assume the 2 issues that wrap the story up will take place 8 decades and then 8 centuries in the future. At least that's what I'm expecting, but we will see. And then to older books, the sort of standard regular reading. Sir Dr. Ange sent a care package recently that included a full Marvel miniseries from 1995, Nightcrawler 1-4 by Dave Cockrum. Kitty is hanging out with Ileana as Kurt does some work in the Danger Room. Somehow, some way, Kitty creates a portal that sends Kurt to another dimension. He and Lockheed start out on a flying pirate ship. Then he ends up under the thumb of a shark man wizard. Then he finds a lovely princess who really wants to smooch him, all before ending up in the land from Kitty's fairy tale. Very strange, but also quite fun. Adventurous and very entertaining. A complete, fully contained, wacky 4-issue adventure. Enjoyed this one quite a bit. Ange also sent the 1st issue of a series that I liked enough to get the whole 1st volume from Hoopla, The Thing, 1-6, from earlier this year. This was written by novelist Walter Mosley, best known for his Easy Rawlings series. This was a strange series taking place in various dimensions, with Ben just finding himself in situations where he was just not suited. In the end, it comes down to Ben, and that's right, Dr. Doom, teaming up, in a manner of speaking, both fighting for the most important women in their life, Alicia and Doom's mommy, because like every good little boy, Victor loves his mommy very much. I am not sure that this was a great comic, but it was definitely doing something different, both in story and very strange art. And at this point in my reading career, sometimes I just appreciate a comic that does something different. And did I mention it had Doom in it? So, yeah. And another one that Ange sent in, and also some more from the DC app, a series from the 70s that I've been working on over the last few months. Secret Society of Supervillains 8-12, and also The Special. Most of which were written by Jerry Conway at this point. I believe that this series is one of the strongest reasons that Dr. Ange and I have become really good buddies. Because even though I am a few years older than he is, we have this series in common. This is where little Professor Allen discovered the great underrated sci-fi hero Captain Comet. And it's where little Dr. Ange discovered his appreciation of the great underrated character, the Creeper. And just between us, I heard a rumor that the presence of Star Sapphire in this may also have introduced Ange to the concept of the bad girl. And the Captain and the Creeper and Star Sapphire are joined in these issues with Wizard and Grodd, and showing up at the end of issue 2, the Reverse Flash. This is such fun, Bronze Age wackiness and weirdness. I have thoroughly enjoyed this revisit, and you may know, that doesn't always happen. But I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I am waiting patiently for the rest of the issues to show up on the app. Sir Manuel Carmona of the charitable effort Comics for Christmas sent a Christmas care package this year that included a run of comics from 2004 when I was totally out of the comics game, Superman 207 to 209, This is parts 4 through 6 of For Tomorrow, written by Brian Azzarello, who, by the way, controversially enough, I am a fan of. I liked the introspective Supes in these and the tense relationships he had with League members. I like when Superman is not everybody's BFF all the time because he has a personality. He has priorities. He's human in that sense. And there are times when people's personality, their priorities, are going to conflict, even with people that you're close to. The key to community is not having always the same viewpoints and seeing eye to eye all the time. It's about figuring out how to maneuver respectfully and properly so those differences don't cause a permanent rending of the relationship. So a little tension here between the big guy and his co-workers, I'm not just okay with that. More than that, I'm in favor of it. Manuel also sent Checkmate 26 through 28 from the Paul Kupperberg run of the late 80s and early 90s. In these, Stein's kids are, well, kidnapped. And he doesn't take well to that idea. A good action-packed story. And also, the very strange Detective Comics 624 from 1990 with an actual cover from a then 75-year-old Dick Sprang. The story is about a dude who thinks he's Batman but isn't, and a gal who really, really wants to be Catwoman but also isn't. And then from there, it gets strange. And Villains for Hire 0.1, in which Misty Knight's hero hiring operation, featuring Black Panther, Silver Sable, and a few others, is taken over by the Purple Man after foiling a robbery attempt by Stiltman. No, not that Stiltman, but the Lady Stiltman, who pointed out that it's the 21st century, and if she wants to be called Stiltman, she should be able to be called Stiltman. I get that. I agree with that. Me? I personally understand this. I recognize that I personally fully possess the potential within me to become a crazy cat lady. Derek WC from the Fanholes also sent a Christmas care package, which included Spider-Man Magazine number 9. This was more or less a kid's book or family book featuring a short Spidey story and a short Iron Man story. The Spidey one is better, as it also includes the one and only, that's right, Dr. Doom. And about a quarter of this book is features and, like, educational bits. It struck me as the kind of thing you'd see in a doctor's office, pediatrician, dentist. Fortunately, I can easily put myself in the mentality of a 9-year-old so I can say, approved. Now, this next one is one that we've had a while. M may have bought it at some point, I'm not sure. But I uncovered this Bronze Age masterpiece, Superboy 177. In this, Superboy has to throw his parents in jail. What? In order to save the world, of course. And then the Legion of Superheroes has a run-in with Superboy's old enemy, Dev M, who claims to have reformed. Very good Legion story, 48 solid pages. Now, generally speaking, no offense, but Superboy solo stories tend to not be my jam. But this one was quite good, and the Legion story was also excellent. So overall, I'll say it, a surprisingly strong issue. From the dollar box at World's Greatest Comics are the falling apart copy of The Flash 170 from 1967. Look, I know, I could probably have read this on the app, but the discovery and then the read of this old-timey paper version was just so much more fun. In this one, Abracadabra is doing something wacky to make Flash unable to see crimes and criminals. So his buddies from Earth 2 come across, and they let him know what's going on, and also help him catch the futuristic magician. Now, when I'm looking at dollar boxes, you know, in other words, expensive comics, I look for, like I just mentioned, falling apart silver or Bronze Age books. But also, I look for oversized books, like the 64-page Green Lantern Corps Quarterly number 3 from 1992. Four stories, a couple of them really good. Unfortunately, two of them are written by, you know, that GL writer who went to jail for doing really bad things. Fortunately, that guy did not write the best story in the issue by far, starring everybody's favorite dog-adjacent GL, Norton But Trouble, hashtag Team Nort. And another 64-pager, Incredible Hulk Annual 17, with a lead story in the Subterranean Wars, story featuring the Mole Man and Tyrannus. Not bad. But the best story, surprisingly enough, was one featuring Rick Jones on a book tour to promote his memoir, Sidekick. 8 pages about the perils of fandom and looking to another for your own value. And another expanded-sized comic. I bought 2 of these and then DC Universe, the other one. Batman Urban Legends 14 through 16 from earlier this year. This is an anthology book, which I am generally not a fan of, but the cast of characters sucked me in. And the fact that all of these stories ended at issue 16 also worked for me. The 3 ongoing tales featured the team of Batman, Constantine, and Zatanna, and the Birds of Prey, and the true star of the issue, Ace the Bat-Hound. Each issue also had a one-off story in addition to continuing those 3 ongoing stories. And my favorite of these was the awkward team-up between Batman and the Question. Now, I know what you're thinking, and yes, a buck is pretty expensive for a comic. But in my defense, each of these issues were on sale earlier in 2022 for $7.99 each, so I think I did okay. And from Capital City Comics, who always have a stack of free books near the exit, mostly old Free Comic Book Day items, I picked up, actually from the recent Halloween comic event, Trick or Read, Amazing Spider-Man and Spidey and His Amazing Friends. The Spidey one was for really young kids, like kids just learning to read, and I really liked it. You know what Green Goblin's big evil was in this? Moving books around on the shelves at the library, all because he didn't have his own card. Now that is the kind of drama that I would have related to when I was 6. And from the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality, I read 2 issues from the Dell run of a famous character, Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan, 42 and 47, which were completely falling apart issues from 1953. Off the top of my head, I don't know that I've ever possessed, owned, actual floppies that were older than that. Photo covers feature Lex Barker as Tarzan, and 52 pages of jungle action. These were fun reads. Lacking the nuance of the Burroughs books, these were fairly one-note characterizations, but that's what comics in the early 50s usually did. Tarzan himself made up at least half the pages in each issue, probably 2/3, with Brother of the Spear as the primary backup, but both were good finds and good comics. From the 33-cent box at Carolina Comics and More, I read from Dark Horse X Special number 2, which was some sort of preview or special issue because it's only 16 pages. Not bad, I think, but I didn't really know what to make of it. And also, Megaton Man 2 and 3. For the longest time, I have had the first issue of this in my collection, so adding these two was a real treat. Very fun stuff. Issue 2 is a parody of the FF, which is always a good thing. Actually, it's more of a DC/Marvel parody crossover, with the Lois Lane analog, a reporter who's known for falling off of ledges, and the Invisible Girl analog heading off together. And issue 3 continues the nuttiness, the commentary, the deconstruction, while also pushing forward a narrative, such as it is. Parody is hard, funny is hard, and of course, taste is taste. But I think Don Simpson was really doing some excellent work here. At my recent attendance at GalaxyCon Columbus, I found 3 for $1 boxes on Sunday, and from there, from DC, from 2009, I read the Red Circle Inferno one-shot written by J. Michael Straczynski. A man who can ignite himself into flames runs into the Hangman. Enjoyable, good story. It does continue into another issue of a Red Circle title, but at the same time, this one constitutes a full story, beginning, middle, and end. And that matters when you're reading books out of the cheap bin. And from Eclipse Comics, from the impressive team of Chuck Dixon and Tim Truman, Airboy number 1 from 1986. I liked Eclipse a lot, and they were willing to experiment. This one, for example, is a bi-weekly comic, and at least this first issue was only 16 pages and priced at 50 cents. I just like the idea of a company doing something different, trying a different business model. Anyway, the story itself was fine. A young man learning of his father's heroic legacy and becoming the reborn Airboy. And a totally falling apart comic with some stains, probably a bit of an odor, but fortunately I'm old enough that I need to hold some reading material at the end of my arms, a good few feet away from my face, which is really important for some of these older books. And that is pretty much how I read Adventure Comics 370, featuring the Legion of Superheroes battling Mordru in Smallville. Goofy, dramatic, wildly of its era, to put it kindly, but well worth all 33 1/3 cents that I paid for it. From the recent quarter bin sale that I stumbled across at a half-price book location, Provenance of Secrets, number 1 from last year, from something called Black Caravan Comics. This features a noirish style private eye taking on a strange case that involves a mysterious theater, a mysterious play, and mysterious symbols showing up at crimes. Intriguing way to start a series, and the character is compelling. From what I could tell, there has not yet been an issue 2 released, but fingers crossed. And also a surf-based mystery story, Third Wave, number 1, from Scout Comics, in which we learn that the cool surf instructor is actually in witness protection. And on the last page, the bad guy who's been on his trail knows where he is. Good start, interesting characters, and glad I picked this one up. Continuing a series that I started last month, which, as we heard, Sir Luke Giaconetti approves of. This is writer Christopher Cantwell's take on Old Shellhead, Iron Man 6-14. This continues the story of Tony and Patsy Walker Hellcat battling Korvac. In these issues, Tony's neck is broken, which means he has to keep the suit on as it holds his body completely in place while it heals. So a number of issues, Tony can't take off the suit, and it really does make a difference in characterization. Also, as a result of his accident, he is being fed pain meds, really strong pain meds, and Tony is scared. He's actually more than scared. He is positive of this fact, that he will become addicted. and that after this adventure, you'll have to work hard to kick that addiction. I liked the bluntness of that. I think this is a modern, mature take on the addict, that a healthy, functioning addict in recovery still knows that they're an addict and knows for sure that they're never more than a day away from falling again. We've all seen this, sadly, with people in our lives. And I think Cantwell did a nice job building on Tony's backstory, his history, to present that fact and that struggle in a modern 2020s manner. Good stuff. And there are more issues of The Run that I still have to read. I expect to knock out the third trade in January. And fingers crossed, the final trade will come out shortly thereafter. And from Hoopla. From Image, I read Crowded 1 through 18, the entire series, taking place in a future not too far away from here, where basically every job is a gig based on one of a million different apps, including crowd-funded assassination. We have a really annoying gal, Charlie, who for some at first unknown reason has a $2 million 30-day Reaper campaign on her head. Whoever does the deed gets the cash. But Vita has signed on from the Defender app to protect her, meaning if Charlie stays alive till the end of the campaign, she gets the cash. It's a bizarre way to run a society, and no, it's not realistic, but it's an interesting commentary on the appification, the gamification of, well, pretty much everything these days. This is a story of the gig economy taking to its crazy extreme. And as we go further into the series, we get more and more of the plot and backstory revealed. Didn't know what to expect when I checked it out, but definitely quite good, enjoyable, solid. And in the third volume, the whole series does come to a satisfactory and somewhat bloody conclusion. And another I started a few months ago, when the school year started. Seems right to read more as the fall semester winds up. Strange Academy, 13 through 18, where the interpersonal issues between the students come to the fore, the students go on strike, and one student makes a dark, dark deal. This all puts the teachers and administrators in a tough spot, and to be honest, there is little I like more in life than administrators being in tough spots. So I continue to enjoy this, and I plan to read the next volume when it shows up on Hoopla. And some kids' books that I read mostly from Pulp Reality and a few from Sir Rob Lance. This is Daffy Duck, 77 and 78. Richie Rich Inventions, 6 and 18. Betty and Me, 41, 50, and 152. Archie Joke Book, 189. Speed Buggy, 8. And The Mouse Guard, Free Comic Book Day books from 2012 and 2014. Mouse Guard is terrific. I love it, and these FCBD books were actually hardcovers, which is not something you often see. One of the Betty and Me issues from 1972 had a circulation statement, which reported that they produced nearly 500,000 issues of this monthly, which sounds great, until you recognize that Betty and Veronica, from the same era, was printing nearly 700,000 issues. Wild numbers, just wild. Daffy Duck, 77, had a really fun story that was a crossover with Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. It is duck season, and Daffy needs to pick up his speed to stay ahead of the hunters, and the Roadrunner coaches him. And no, things don't really work out one bit. There's also a good story in that issue about Yosemite Sam struggling with the changing economics of piracy now that gold is being transported on trains more often these days. These days being when the story was first published, I don't know, 60 years ago. That's poor Yosemite on the wrong end of hashtag creative destruction. So that makes it the time to take our first break, play a promo, and when we come back, it'll be time to get into our hashtag holiday comics month reading.
Monthly, monthly, monthly! It's Action Film Face-Off!
Hello, I'm Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, and I'd like to tell you about a podcast I do with my brother, Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist.
Action Film Face-Off!
Yes, thank you, Jared. Action Film Face-Off is a podcast where my brother and I, who are both military combat vets...
Jason was a Navy SEAL!
Jason was not a Navy SEAL. Jason was a military intelligence wing. But anyway, in each episode of Action Film Face-Off, we select two different action films.
Some of them have Chuck Norris!
Technically speaking, none of them have had Chuck Norris yet, but it could happen because we use a randomizer set between 1970 and modern day to select our two films. So you'll always get two films, each from a different year.
Our randomizer has spikes on it!
We use a Google random number generator, so it does not have spikes on it. And we put the films into our Video Dome arena.
It also has spikes!
It does not have spikes. But we discuss the films and score them through six different rounds of criteria.
I score Bond films very high.
Okay, that's true. But anyway, by the end of the episode, we crown one of the action films the champion of Action Film Face-Off.
Next episode, Jason fights a bear.
Jason is not fighting a bear, but please give our show a listen. We're part of the Long Box Crusade network of shows.
Pat Sampson killed a man with a sword once.
I can neither confirm nor deny that statement, but you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and most podcatchers under Longbox Crusade, or you can subscribe to just our show by searching for Action Film Face-Off.
Come see the blood fly!
And that's Action Film Face-Off. We do, indeed, invite you to come and see the blood fly.
I just said that!
And we're back to talk about seasonal reading, which for December, of course, means hashtag Holiday Comics Month. I mentioned a few earlier in the episode in terms of books I read to listen to or actually appear on holiday-related podcasts, such as Super Friends, A Brave and the Bold, and DC Holiday Bash. But I read a few others as well. So in approximate alphabetical order, we have, and we do start with books from Archie, Pep Digital 67 and 174, titled Under the Mistletoe, and Archie's Christmas Carols. Each of these had their specific vibe or premise on the holidays. The Christmas Carols one did indeed focus on singing, be that from the Archies or choirs, or the gang caroling. A great story in the Christmas Carol collection featured the gang showing up at Lodge Mansion to host a local daycare for carols and cookies, only for their Santa Claus, Mr. Weatherby, of course, to be kidnapped and replaced by a thief who wants to steal jewels from the mansion. Hilarity ensues, as does drama. Some action, and Archie ends up going on a date with the daycare worker, much to the chagrin of both, Betty and Veronica. And a number of what is technically Archie Giant series, but all of these have the cover title Sabrina's Christmas Magic. And these are issues 196, 207, 220, 231, 243, 455. Yes. They did jump up 200 issues in the numbering of this title for no reason that I can figure. 455, and 467. These all focus on Sabrina having the Christmas spirit, while her witchy relatives, usually not so much. There was a really good story with the aunts learning the true meaning of the season when they joined Sabrina as Salvation Army bell ringers. Aunt Hilda also has a couple of run-ins with Santa. Issue 196 had a great story on the common theme of Sabrina doing too much good and not enough bad. So one day, she really gives a few people a really bad day, messing up their car, just terrifying them. And it all ends up with them being arrested and tossed in jail. The aunts are overjoyed at Sabrina for this foul behavior. She does not tell them what we the readers know, which is that these folks had just robbed a bank in Riverdale. Classics Illustrated 15, The Gift of the Magi, and Other Stories by O. Henry. The Gift of the Magi is the most famous of these, the most Christmassy of these stories. But some of the other short stories were also quite good with snappy endings. And there was some interesting biographical information about O. Henry in the back matter, about his questionable history that I was unaware of. But to be fair, he pulled out one of the all-time great Christmas short stories. And as is the case often with Classics Illustrated, the adaptations and artwork in this are quite good. I covered one of these stories on Joe Crawford's show, but I went ahead and reread the entire DC Rebirth Holiday Special. The story I covered is the wonderful Epiphany, starring Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz. Although the Hanukkah story with Batwoman is also solid. And I really enjoy the story where Batman teams up with the actual greatest detective in the DCU. That's right, Detective Chimp. Because it's not really a DC special until a talking monkey shows up. And from Valiant, Faith's Winter Wonderland special, in which our heroine is sucked into a mind-bending world where Alice and her realm has been corrupted by commercialism and toy tie-ins and plastics and dyes. But Faith is able to return Alice's, well, faith in the holiday season, and they all live. That's right, you guessed it. They all live happily ever after. And from Dell Comics from the 1940s and 50s, thank you, Public Domain, 4 Color, 6191, 128, 175, 302, and 361, each of which is branded as Santa Claus Funnies. These were definitely old-fashioned, old-timey comics, and more often than not, I liked that. These issues had a story or two that starred Santa himself, and not in stories that were necessarily our stereotype of Santa here in the modern day. One had the mischievous Jack Frost, think young Loki, stealing the sleigh, so Santa has to go to the elves for assistance. Many of these issues also had an illustrated Christmas carol running over a few pages, as well as an illustrated poem of some kind. And I like illustrated stories, so that format really pleased me. These were just very fun, although occasionally strange and weird and old-fashioned in the bad way, throwback issues. And clocking in at 64 pages from a publisher I've covered a decent amount of over the years, I read the Impact Winter Special. This was done really well. One long story about the kidnapping of the first President Bush at the lighting of the National Christmas Tree. But the story was told in 5 to 7 page chapters, each featuring a different Impact property. So we get some S.H.I.E.L.D. and Jaguar and the Web, the Black Hood, the Fly, etc. And it more or less worked. Impact had legitimately solid comic writers. Mark Waid, Grant Meem, William Messner Loebs, Mark Wheatley. And those skilled veterans certainly helped smooth out the transitions in the story from one character to the next, the handoff of the story from one property to the next. It was entertaining, and that's all you really need sometimes. And let's get our brony on, everybody, for the My Little Pony holiday specials from 2015, 2017, and 2019. All about the ponies involved in various adventures and shenanigans regarding Hearthswarming Eve. And lots of horse-related puns, my favorite being the skating rink at Rockefeller Center. The 2019 issue, I think it was, had a train derailment storyline that occurred at Poirot Pass. Generally, I like these little bits of humor and references more than the actual, you know, stories. They're fine, but not really for me. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, Secret Society continues to be a blast of a reread. Megaton Man number 2 was legitimately funny all the way through. Crowded was solid. I'm a fan of the Rebirth Holiday Special. Some of the Sabrina Christmas magic stories are really good. But in terms of my absolute favorite, and this surprised me when I realized it, but the 48-page Superboy 177 is a very solid, very enjoyable, very good comic book, and it was my favorite read of the month. And that is usually where these episodes end. But since this is the year-end episode, we will come back for our annual year-in-review segment where I analyze and overthink my comic book reading for 2022.
Can I get a tall chai?
And a large black coffee.
And I suppose you're here with no agenda, as per usual?
On the contrary, I'm here for comics.
I think I can help all of you. Hello, I'm the caffeinated Clinton Robison, and I host a podcast called Coffee and Comics. On this podcast, I summarize, review, and discuss comic book issues, stories, and related media, usually in the span of time it takes to have a cup of coffee. Sometimes I'm joined by a guest, and sometimes I'm flying solo. So pour the coffee, take a sip, and turn up the volume as you listen to the Coffee and Comics Podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, and directly on coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com. And remember, this is where the comics are never too old, and the coffee is never too cold.
And we're back with the end of year status report portion of the episode. Do you remember that year? It was a few decades back when Time Magazine, for their Person of the Year issue, included a type of mirror finish on the cover because the people, well, really the readers of Time Magazine, I guess, were in fact the people of the year. I say that to say that in the same spirit of generosity, respect, and laziness, I am pleased to announce that you, that's right, you, right now, all of you who are or will be listening to this episode in the future, y'all are listeners of the year. Congratulations. Pat yourselves on the back and have yourself a nice snack first chance you get. I was going to recommend that you indulge in your beverage of choice as a celebration, but it was pointed out to me by the attorney of the pod, Paul Spatero Esquire, that many people listen to podcasts while driving, and encouraging the imbibing of certain beverages could lead to significant and costly lawsuits for the network, so just enjoy that snack, okay? And you can send your invoices for snack reimbursement straight to the Lady Laurel care of Long Box Crusade Podcast HQ, somewhere USA. She runs that place over there and can definitely slide you some cash from their Patreon fund over to us that they were going to use to free Clinton from the basement, but come on. This is a higher priority, obviously. I'm sure Clinton understands. And all of that brings us to this, our final segment, in which I perform the same type of reading analysis that I've done a few times over the years to spot trends in any reading habits. So what I'm going to do here is give an analysis of the just under 1,400 comics that I read during 2022, which is a very significant drop of about 500 comics. This was expected, though maybe not that big a drop, but changes at work and other things cut into my rate of reading, really, since the last quarter of 2021. This is a trend I expect to continue, maybe reading 20 to 25 issues a week as opposed to the 30 or 35 that I was reading for the past few years, especially at the height of lockdowns and COVID stuff. So first, the breakdown by publisher for 2022, DC and Marvel slipped precipitously, making up a combined 43% of all the comics that I read, DC at 25% and Marvel at 18%. This is the lowest combined reading share from the big two since I've been keeping track of this data starting in 2015, and only the second time that their combined values have fallen below 50%. Archie was again the number three publisher with a record 10% reading share. Image also had a record year for me, coming in at 9%. The Image series that I read bunches of include Postal, Alex and Ada, Crowded, and Witchblade. Almost all of the Image books that I read were read via the Hoopla Digital app. Dynamite, Boom, and IDW each came in at over 3%, Titan about 2%, and Nobody Else top 1%. In terms of the format of the books I read, there was a continuation of a sea change here. Digital cracked 50% in 2021 and then came in at 63% in 2022. Floppies dropped to 34% and physical trades fell to just 3%. The prominence of digital is a result of two aspects, the Hoopla Digital app and the DC Universe app, with a small number of public domain books thrown in there as well. I have not talked about Hoopla for a while, so I will remind you that this is an app full of digital ebooks, comics, music, movies, etc. It runs through a number of public libraries. And if you have a library card from a system that utilizes Hoopla, then you can have access to the stuff that Hoopla has on contract. It is a wonderful system. Now, sitting here recording this after Christmas, I can tell you that I expect the physical trades to increase from just 3% in 2022 because Derek WC of the Fan Holes podcast sent me a handful of trades. And I also purchased, on deep discount, mind you, a bunch of trades as well. So I have easy access here at home to many unread comics via physical trade. So I certainly expect that number to increase next year. One interesting change was the era from which I read comics. I break this into the decades, 70s, 80s, 90s, the aughts, while grouping everything before 1970 into one catch-all old stuff category. Now, the share of new books, which would be books from the last 2 years, dropped from 11% to 10%, the lowest share ever, again, since I've kept track of this information. And that value has consistently dropped each of the last 6 years. Even with the DC app having books appear, I guess it's 6 months now with the regular service, and if I upgrade, it'll be 1 month. I'm just not engaged with much in the way of current books, certainly not from DC or Marvel. However, the 2010s as a decade did pop up a little bit, but most other decades dropped a percentage or two. The biggest change was in pre-1970s comics, and this reading rate reached an all-time high, doubling from 8% to 16%. One out of every six comic books that I read was well over 50 years old. There was not a single title here that had an outsized impact. This was just reading a ton of a wide variety of books. I do think that focusing as much as I did in 2022 on the monthly genres probably had an impact here, with some of those genres lending themselves to older books, the romance, the sci-fi, the horror, the war. But still, more than ever, the trend seems to be that the older I get, the older the comic books are that I read. And no surprise, this was a very cheap year for me. Yes, I'm very proud of that as well. Although I have to confess, slightly less cheap than prior years. Personally, I blame inflation for this. Now, as has been the recent trend, almost three quarters of the comics I read last year were free. These are a few trades from the physical library, the public library. Also, the Hoopla and DCU apps qualify here. And, of course, all the issues that came from the generosity of lovely listeners via the hashtag comic book circle of life. If you were someone who has participated in that over the years, I thank you. Now, books in the 1 to 24 cent and 25 to 49 cent ranges, both of these were pretty low. This is because super cheap books are just hard to find these days. Although there is one sign of hope. At two separate locations of Half Price Books here in Central Ohio, over the last few months, they have had a few selected quarter boxes. So that is something. That is perhaps a return to form of super cheap comics. So, I have traded out my predominant cheap bin diving, being quarters, sometimes even dimes, settling for the three for a dollar. But recently, 2022, for example, I've had to move to the 50-cent bin at Pulp Reality. And that range, 50 to 99 cent, reached an all-time high of 16% of my reading. Stinking inflation. But I am proud to say that less than 4% of the books that I read cost me a dollar or more. And so few were over $2 that those categories round to 0.0%. All that means is no pull list, very few new purchased comics, And no new annuals or special edition, you know, issue 1000s or anything like that. Now, one thing I reported on last year for the first time, but I liked it, so I'm doing it again, is a top 10 countdown of the titles I read the most of in 2022. And it is quite a different scenario from last year. Now, like I said, my overall reading was way down, and that really shows up in this analysis as well, because last year, there was a title that I read 50-plus issues of. Another one was over 30, three more at 25, and five more at 20. But this year, the high was 20 issues. So here is the countdown. Tied for ninth place at 16 issues was Goldie Vance and Captain Britain and MI-13. Eighth place with 17 issues read was the Birds of Prey, to follow along with the Lady Laurel and her team. Three-way tie for fifth place at 18 issues read is Crowded, Strange Academy, and Life with Archie. Fourth place, and if you'd given me 100 guesses, I would never have come up with Batmanga. Blame hashtag Global Comics Month last March for that one. And then the three-way tie for first at just a paltry 20 issues each. Robin, when I got caught up with Rob on Everyone Loves the Drake just before that show went into hiatus. And also Postal, which I've mentioned before. And because of October's hashtag horror comics month, the Dresden Files. Very strange mix there, no doubt about that. Now, I think maybe a better way of classifying the reading instead of by title is by lead character to give a more representative view of who and what I read in 2022. And looking at the books I read in this category, you get 10th place, Harry Dresden. 9th place, The Justice League. That is, of course, in a variety of incarnations. Number 8, Helena Bertinelli, The Huntress. Hello, Laurel. Number 7, Betty and Veronica. This is both their combined book, but also each one's solo book as well. Number 6, Dick Grayson, in his many guises and forms and titles. Number 5, Superman. And look, Superman fans, if you want this character to be higher on the list next year, really, you've got to petition Podcasting's Michael Bailey to produce more episodes of From Crisis to Crisis. I would gladly listen to that show, gladly read more Superman comics, and gladly push the Man of Steel higher up the list in 2023. Number 4, The Legion of Superheroes. Number 3, the only character in the top 10 reppin' Marvel, Spidey, again in all his various forms and incarnations, in secret identities, etc. Number 2, Archie. And number 1, no surprise, ladies and gentlemen, your Dark Knight detective, a Batman. And there you have it. And that indeed was a lot of talking. I hope you enjoyed that lot of listening. Thanks for hanging with me for this pretty good-sized end-of-year episode. I mentioned this on the Quarterbin recently, that I'm not going to continue to align episodes of the Quarterbin with the monthly genres like I did in 2022, but I will keep tailoring my general comics reading to that really cool monthly project, as we have for the last few years. So genre reading will continue to be segments on this very podcast, the Comics Reading Journal. So what that means is that for next month, I'll be reading an ever-loving ton of science fiction comics. I don't know for sure what those will be, but X-Files and Star Wars and Nexus are all on the list, as is, of course, our old buddy Adam Strange. Also, I got a ton of comics from generous listeners for Christmas, including some sci-fi ones, so expect to hear about a bunch of those. And whatever books I do read in January, be they sci-fi or not, I'll be talking about them here in an episode that ought to be out sometime in early February. If you have a feel for the types of comics you read, the Marvel DC Indie Breakdown, whether your reading increased or decreased in 2022, your most read title or character, consider letting me know. I'd love to hear about that. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek, and of course the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.